Now, the Minneapolis Fire Department says crews were still putting out fires this afternoon after a night of violent protests in the city. This morning, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey said the violence is not just a reaction to the death of George Floyd, but a long history of injustice towards African Americans.
Over the last 2 days and the emotion-ridden conflict over last night is the result of so much built-up anger and sadness. Anger and sadness that has been ingrained in our black community, not just because of 5 minutes of horror, but 400 years.
George Floyd was an unarmed black man who died Monday evening while in police custody. Video shows him in handcuffs, being restrained to the ground while a white officer kneeled on his neck for several minutes. Floyd can be heard yelling repeatedly that he couldn't breathe. Meanwhile, a separate incident in New York City is touching off discussions about how black people are reported to police, sometimes falsely. Chad Dion Lassiter is executive director of the Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission, a frequent guest on this show talking about issues of race in America. Chad, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, and good evening.
Well, before we get into broader issues here, can you share your reaction to what's happened over the last few days, Monday in particular, in Minneapolis?
Well, for me, it's both and. It's devastating. It's certainly a part of an American tragedy. Another classic example of how oftentimes some police officers engage in what I would say is implicit as well as explicit biases, as well as, you know, a white supremacist ideology that oftentimes see black bodies as disposable, rendering them non-void, non-person, non-entity, and engaging in forms of dehumanization. The and part becomes very devastated at the looting. I know oftentimes people have trended with the quote of Martin Luther King that riots are the language of the unheard. But I think if Martin Luther King was here in this moment, he would be saddened by the aspect of the anthology of police brutality by some officers, the maintenance of the blue wall of silence and status quo by several officers, but also of the looting and the destroying of property. We don't want property destroyed, nor do we want personhood attacked. But we do have to find a therapeutic way for people to release the anger and pain that the mayor spoke about with regard to generational trauma.
We'll get to some of the concerns about protests and riots in a bit. This case at least seems unusual at the outset. The officers were fired quickly. We'll listen to the Minnesota mayor talking about that more in just a few moments. But also a lot of police chiefs around the country have reacted with alarm and condemnation of the police actions in this case. And things don't always pan out that way, at least not so quickly. What do you make of that response?
I think looking at it from a strengths-based perspective, it puts us into the moment that we're at. 5 years ago, we weren't trending in this moment. And so all of these police chiefs, they need to be commended. And I think we're at a point in time where police departments in various townships, boroughs, and cities all over our democracy are trying to engage in anti-racism training, trying to do programs around diversity and inclusion. And so my hat goes off to them. It's devastating that something like this continues to occur. But looking at it, if we're going to look at an aspect of hope, I'm hopeful that, you know, more police departments and more police chiefs around our democracy will trend in the same very direction.
I want to give a listen again to the mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey, talking about what he hopes happens next when it comes to the police officers involved.
Why is the man who killed George Floyd not in jail? If you had done it, or I had done it, we would be behind bars right now. And I cannot come up with a good answer to that question. And so I'm calling on Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman to act on the evidence before him. I'm calling on him to charge the arresting officer in this case.
Do you agree that the officer should be charged, Chad?
Certainly, the officer should have been charged and the officer should be behind bars. The mayor was not asking a Socratic question. I have an answer to what the mayor posed. The reason why he's not been arrested at the present time is simply because what we're really looking at is this whole aspect of protecting whiteness. Whiteness protects the mob, but it doesn't protect those who get mobbed. And so I understand what the mayor is talking about. And I think that's the challenge that we have on all sides of the color line, but specifically for African Americans who tend to say, Why is it that we're dying and you find a convenient and sophisticated way to apprehend others like Dylann Roof and multiple others? And so definitely he needs to be charged, and it needs to be swift justice with regards to him being charged.
Talking to Chad Dion Lassiter, he's with the Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission. We often call him up to talk about issues related to race here in the United States. And Chad, I mean, we've had something like this discussion, you and I, a number of times over the years. Do you think, what is it going to take to move the needle to where we don't need to have this conversation again?
You're absolutely right, Rob. I think you and I have been trending coming up on almost a decade. And I think what's going to have to happen is that we're going to have to really look at policy. There has to be, and I don't think there's an antidote for this. I think we have to look at what the mayor actually stated. We have to have a conversation about white racism and white violence that starts from the inception of our democracy throughout the Civil War and brings us into the contemporary era. For your listening audience, that's not an indictment against white individuals when we talk about white privilege, white supremacy, white arrogance, and things of that nature, because we have whites who are just as distraught and disappointed of this killing. To hear the word that we heard with Eric Garner, "I can't breathe again." So I think it's training. I think it's policy. I think it's ongoing dialogue around the underpinnings and the framework of implicit, explicit biases. And I think also not to rush to judgment. We want the community to see the humanity of our officers who stop us for whatever reason, but we want officers to also see the humanity of black and brown people that they stop as well. So I think policies centered around teaching people that they can file a formal complaint, also informing people of our ethnic and hate intimidation laws. And if you're not going to get recourse, even though this individual is dead, unfortunately, you can also file for civil remedies as well. And that's what happened in the Eric Garner's case as well. So I think it's just a plethora of just coalition building, policies, getting the Department of Justice involved, and multiple others.
Now, in this particular case, initially, reportedly, the police department said that that Floyd had died of a medical incident during the arrest while he was in police custody. If a bystander hadn't been taking a video of this, do you suspect we wouldn't know about it? Don't know what had happened here?
I don't want to rush to judgment, but one of the things that we do know is that given the context of the COVID-19, as well as the pandemic of hate and the virus of hate that permeates aspects, or if not all of our democracy, you have a lot of people of color who have pre-existing conditions for multiple reasons. So we saw that excuse come out with Eric Garner in New York that he was rather obese. He still shouldn't have been choked. He said he couldn't breathe. You should have saw his humanity. And this situation, the gentleman is saying that he couldn't breathe. It didn't matter if he had type 1, type 2 diabetes, hypertension. It didn't matter if he was asthmatic. When he said he could not breathe, as a human, and because the cop is a human as well, the cop should have seen his humanity and trended in the direction to take his knee off of his neck. When we look at the graphic images, not just the 5-minute video, but the graphic images, the cop has his hand in his pants and he's looking as if this is just a casual thing that you do, that you put a knee on a person until they suffocate. And so I really fundamentally believe that what cameras provide us is an opportunity to capture forms of systemic and structural oppression that oftentimes without the camera, it would be speculating. But even with the camera, individuals who are dead are still being tried from the grave. We have to articulate the narrative that he was a Harvard graduate. It doesn't matter if he had a degree from Harvard University or a GED, he's in fact a human being.
And Chad, getting back to you also, you mentioned the both and the issue of the protests, some looting, things turning violent in some cases. I don't know. How is that? How can that anger be channeled in a way that can make positive change?
To be honest with you and to continue to be who I am, which is walk in truth, kindness, and love, I really don't know. What I can share is that when I was in Ferguson, right around the time of the looting and after the looting, I worked with several community organizations and specifically children around play therapy, art therapy, music therapy. I just fundamentally believe that we just have to get together and have a conversation, specifically social workers, psychologists, sociologists, about what can we do when people reach this level. There are really fundamentally just two ways that you cope, adaptively and maladaptively. But I understand the anger, but I cannot sit still as a human being and condone, you know, the throwing of bottles at authority, even though I understand the anger, the destruction of property, nor do I want to see anyone attack people from a personhood standpoint. But I'm open to learn. I'm in the learning process of this as well, as it pertains to where does the outpouring of grief. And when the mayor talks about 400 years of generational trauma, people may say, well, how does that work in the contemporary? Well, it's the negating of a person's humanity that continues to occur. It happened on the slave blocks, it happened in the cotton fields, and now it's happening on the streets of America. Tamir Rice, Sandra Bland, Eric Garner, and so forth and so on.
We're talking about the death of George Floyd while in Minneapolis police custody, the protests, the violence in the city that followed. Chad Dion Lassiter is executive director of the Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission, frequent guest here on Central Time talking about issues of race in America. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What was your reaction to Floyd's death, the shocking video? What should happen to the officers involved in this case? How does this fit into wider issues of race in the United States? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about race relations in America with Chad Dion Lassiter, executive director of the Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission, looking at the death of George Floyd after a white Minneapolis police officer knelt on his neck for minutes while restraining him. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your takeaway from that incident, the protests and violence that followed, other similar cases around the United States? How can we prevent these kind of things from happening again? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Mike is on the line in Madison. Mike, hello.
Hello. So I think this goes beyond just basic racism, because as a white male, I have personally been beat up by white officers, black officers, and one Asian officer. And each time I was attacked by police was because I was standing up for an unarmed citizen being abused by the police. And I've stood up for people, for women, for people of color, and it didn't matter. And the police will always stand up for themselves. So beyond the racist part, I think this is a blue racism. This is just a police state, and they're going to stick up for each other no matter what. And
Mike, thanks for the call. Chad, Mike, talking about what people call sometimes a blue wall of silence.
Mike is absolutely right when he talks about the blue wall of silence. That's a form of the maintenance of the status quo, but it's not beyond racism. It's, in fact, white supremacy, because Dylan Roof kills 9 people in a black church, and they apprehended him and ended up taking them to Burger King on the way to the police station. So I advocate for what Mike said, and I don't want to take agency away from him, but Mike is still living. And so what is it about black bodies? What is it about a black man who's in Central Park engaged in a phenomenon or hobby of watching birds sing and chirp and engage with one another, that he just simply says, hey, can you put your dog on a leash? And then it's the historical narrative that we see trending where some white individuals feel comfortable to call the police and say that they're in the victimization role and that someone's attacking them. So I hear what Mike is saying, but when we look at Timothy McVeigh, Jeffrey Dahmer, the Branch Davidians, when we look at Ted Bundy and multiple whites who have engaged in horrific acts, they tend to be taken alive. Tamir Rice had a water gun. He lost his life. Sandra Bland was making a turn signal. She lost her life. You know, and so that's where the challenge becomes in our democracy. It's implicit, explicit bias and his white supremacy, not by all cops, but he's absolutely right with the wall, blue wall of silence, which is a form of racism as well.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Mary joins us now in Milwaukee. Mary, hi.
Yes.
Yeah, what did you want to bring up, Mary?
Oh, I was just wanted to say the guest had said that he was willing to learn. And again, I was trying to find out, what are you trying to learn from this incident? Because many incidents have taken place similar to this and the same outcome. So I just need to know what you're trying to learn, because we should have learned long ago about this type of violence against the people of color.
Mary, thanks for the call. Chad, what would you say to Mary?
I would say that if Mary heard me correctly, the context that you posed to me, Rob, was like, what can we do to reduce some of the looting and things of that nature? And I said, I don't know. It would be disingenuous placating, ingratiating, and displaying with false generosity if I was to say I had all the answers. I'm not trying to learn about the anthology of police brutality. I'm trying to still be in the learning mode. I think this is a teachable moment for all of us. And a teachable moment for me is when people are angry psychologically and they want to destroy property or maybe destroy people, what therapeutic environment can we create for them to have a therapeutic outlet? Because when you're looting and when you're destroying property and when you're throwing things at authorities, they also may feel anger, and the whole entire milieu is heightened that what happens if a police officer decides to shoot back because they're protecting themselves. So I hope that I provided further clarity for that. I think everything that this situation teaches us is a teachable moment. Don't rush to judgment. That videotapes are great to have, that we have a mayor who does not look like the population that died, and he's trending on the side of truth, love, and kindness because he sees the humanity of George Floyd.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Chad Dion Lassiter about the death in police custody of George Floyd in Minneapolis earlier this week and the protests, the reactions since then. Back to your calls now. Julia is with us in Madison. Julia, hello.
Hi, thank you for having me on. I just want to say, as a white American, I'm heartbroken, distraught at one. Yes, what these police officers have done. I believe that they need to be brought to justice, and I do believe that they need to see prison time. I think it is a bigger issue. I don't think it's just the police. Let's look at the gentleman that was gunned down while running down, was it Missouri? I think this is a huge problem for our country, and my heart goes out to all African Americans and to our country. I think in many ways we haven't grown as much as we think we have in racism and how we look at our fellow man. And I appreciate what the gentleman is sharing today in regards to learning from this and what can we do in going forward. I also understand about why the people in Minneapolis are so angry. Do I believe violence is the answer? No. But I think in many situations, people have tried to be calm and learn from situations, but then you have a repeat of situation like this, and people are up in arms of what do we do?
Julia, thanks a lot for the call. Julia referring, I think, Chad, to Ahmaud Arbery, who was shot in Georgia back in, I believe, February. Your thoughts, and I've seen some people like our caller who are white who are wondering, you know, how they can make a difference apart from feeling bad about what's happened.
Well, I think if you go by what she just stated so eloquently, you heard her passion. I think what happens is we're seduced into the concept of race that we oftentimes trend on the level of ethnocentrism. And we think that, okay, there are not whites out here who are concerned about black humanity, or there are conservative people out here who don't see transphobia, homophobia, and xenophobia. So she's absolutely right. And for African Americans and minorities, we need to not say, oh, that's just a white person who is racist and who's liberal, hiding their true racism behind their liberalism, or that's a white person who engages in benevolent racism. There are, as she stated herself, white individuals who are distraught, who are despondent, who are depressed because of this situation and multiple situations. And so I think we continue to do coalition building on every side of the color line, every side of the gender line. And she's right, because it's macro, it's institutional racism. Prejudice plus power, when you have educational apartheid, economic injustice, environmental racism, and then also within certain demographic groups, if people are engaging in forms of despair, hopelessness, COVID-19 has everyone in a state of shock. It's a global pandemic. And then the challenge that we have is even with this pandemic, it has not stopped forms of violence towards black people, jogging while black, reading the Bible while black, sleeping in the library at Yale University while black. And it just becomes a continued problem. And so we have to really put laws forward that say that if you call the police on a black person, because it's trending towards black people, and it doesn't pan out to be anything, then there has to be some sort of you know, punishment for that. Not, you know, putting people behind bars for a year or anything like that, but it should be some sort of fine from a policy perspective.
In our last few moments, Chad, what do you want people to be thinking about learning in the days to come?
That we're all part of the human race, and this is not a touchy-feely, kumbaya, we shall overcome moment that I'm sharing, but we're part of the human race. We have to have a frank conversation of the racial elephant in the room, which is a diseased democracy, not just a fractured and faltering democracy, but a diseased democracy that has to have a frank conversation about why it surveillances black bodies, the surveillance of black bodies, the suspicion of black males and brown and black people has got to be a part of a conversation. And I think that this was another opportunity with your callers and several callers in your listening audience for white people to recognize white privilege exists. Don't give up your privilege, but how can you leverage your privilege on behalf of black humanity, white poor humanity, and all humanity?
Chad, thanks again for joining us today.
Always good to be on your show. Take care. Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Chad Dion Lassiter, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission. We talked to him about the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis police custody.